Hello. Hopefully you're all here for the Austin MMO panel. My name is Gordon Walton. I'm the co-studio director at BioWare Austin and the moderator for the panel. And we're going to kick off by just having all the panelists introduce themselves, talk about who they are, where they work, and what they've worked on. And we'll start with Shannon.
Hi, my name is Shannon Cusick, and I run a small company of five people big, and we have four games out, three web-based games and one 3D, all massive multiplayer games, and constantly cranking out more games. And
What are the names of the game?
My company name is Orbis Games, sorry.
And the game names?
The games are Virtual Horse Ranch, Virtual Horse Ranch 2, which is the 3D version, Sandbox Farm, and Virtual Pups, which is a doggy version of the horse game.
I'm John Blakely. I'm the studio VP for SOE Austin. Just recently relocated here to Austin about 2 years ago from our San Diego office, where I was a senior producer on EverQuest 2. Currently working on Star Wars Galaxies and developing DC Comics online. So I'm very happy to be here.
My name is Todd Coleman. I am the I'm one of the two direct game directors at King's Isle Austin. King's Isle is also an MMO company. We're a startup that is well-funded. We've got about 50 people in the Austin office and about a dozen more in our Dallas corporate office. My background is I was one of the founders of Wolfpack Studios, another MMO company here in town, and before that I was actually a MUD administrator. I kind of came from the, I'd say a good chunk of the people up here who came from the game space, I really came just completely out of left field. I think I probably share that in common with you. So, and I'd like to thank Gordon for the invitation.
Yes.
And I'm Richard Garriott. I'm one of the old fogies of the Austin gaming business. I'm best known for the Ultima series, which I wrote for about the last 25 years or so. I founded a company previously called Origin with my brother Robert, and more recently started another company called NCSoft, and I'm working on a game called Tabula Rasa, which we're just now starting to ramp up the public beta process in preparation for launch later this year. Thank you.
Super. But when you say old fogey, Richard, you really make me feel ancient.
Yeah, you know, I debated Gordon on kind of saying I'm one of the two oldest fogies, I think, in here. Bookended by Gordon.
First time I've felt young in this business in a while.
Awesome. So, you know, next question for you guys is, you know, what made you choose Austin as the place to, you know, build MMOs? And we'll start with Richard on the other end.
So it's interesting. So of course, you know, when I first moved Origin here to Austin, it was not to do MMOs specifically. But it is interesting to see what happened back in the mid '80s when you know, we had started Origin in my parents' garage in Houston. We briefly moved to my brother's primary residence, which was on the East Coast, where we operated for 3 years. And then I couldn't stand the frozen wastelands of New England. And so I worked hard to move back to warmer climates. And I had briefly gone to school here at UT before dropping out of school to start Origin. And already had kind of fallen in love with this city personally. And so this was a natural place for me to come back to have a warmer climate to start creating games. But a very interesting thing occurred when we moved back here, which is the company already existed for 3 or 4 years and was doing very well. But when we moved to Austin, we did extraordinarily well. And I really believe was because of the city and some of the qualities that it had that facilitated that occurrence. In particular, you know, since Austin was already a great high-tech town and a great arts town, and in my mind, the quintessential high-tech art is computer games, that meant that even though there were no people trained in the computer games business, the people who were either already as close as possible to that or had a natural affinity for crossing the line between those two standards were in to a high degree, in a high density here in Austin. And especially if you contrast that with California, where the cost of living even at the time was 2 to 3 times higher, it meant that not only did we find a lot of great artists and a lot of great people who would become world builders to build these worlds, where they just kind of flocked to our company, but it also meant that since it was approximately 1/3 the cost, we could develop for our role-playing games considerably more content and considerably higher quality content than a lot of the California companies could afford to do. And so it was a big competitive advantage early on. With the first big online game that we developed, Ultima Online, it seemed to be a very risky maneuver that wasn't particularly well supported by corporate ideology at the time, but obviously it worked out pretty well.
So, my answer is a little more pedestrian. I grew up here. My parents must have had some kind of premonition because they moved me here when I was in middle school, I guess knowing that the MMO center of the world the Western world would be in Austin. So, no, I've always been here. I went away to college and went away for some jobs, but there's no question to me that Austin's always been my home. So it was just kind of an obvious.
I moved here, so I came to Austin. I grew up, I lived a long time in Houston, so it was familiar to me, but I had gone astray getting into this business, and really kind of to echo what Richard said about, just quality of life. It was very important to me. I think what's interesting is the kind of my peers that I came up with. I've been in the business about 14 years now. I can number them on one hand, and a lot of that is a lot of experience that's left and moved on because priorities change and things change in your life. You get a family, you grow up a little bit, but I'm still in a kid's business, which is the fun part. Just don't tell anybody. And so basically, moving to Austin has allowed me to raise a family. I have four boys, so my house is a zoo at home, and also participate in the industry that I love and continue to do that. And it allows me to afford a quality of life that I think a lot of developers are interested in, and it's been really useful for me in terms of building a team here to get some of that experience, keep them in this business, because it is all about iteration, and that experience is invaluable. And so I've been really blessed to be able to come here and live in this community and also introduce others to the community, so it's been great.
Well, I moved to Austin because these guys were here, and I knew I was in the right town when even my dental hygienist had a Lord British story. And also, all signs started pointing to Austin. My husband's family lived out here, and the cost of living definitely. I was living in a restored chicken coop in California for $1,100 a month, and now got.
But it was restored, place. So.
Yeah, you got a place five times bigger for a couple $100 cheaper. So, the team that I partnered up also wanted to come here and move to Austin. And I'd come out here for a game conference and absolutely loved it. And it's a beautiful place to live. And the industry's here, and I hope it stays here.
So I'm also from Houston originally and grew up there. And I've worked in the game business all over the country. And I was fortunate enough to be able to come to Origin and work on Ultima Online in 1999 with Richard. And it was clear to me then that Austin was a place I wanted to live just from the quality of life. But also, the talent base for online people, was kind of started here in a major way. I was working for an online company before I came here, but it wasn't sustainable because we didn't have a critical mass. And what Austin has now, I think, is critical mass of people doing online games. So to that, moving on from that, what do we think are the two biggest advantages that Austin currently enjoys when it comes to making MMOs? And I'll start with Shannon.
Definitely the networking opportunity, because there's a lot of companies already here. For an independent company like we have, the creative environment here, obviously Austin breeds creativity with the music business and all that. I think that's partially because of the beautiful area it is and the relaxed attitude and the liberal environment. I think that definitely spawns creativity, and that helps get a lot of human resources and artists next door. Just in my area, most of my neighbors, they were a musician for a company like Sony, or they worked at Seasoft, and so it's kind of like, we all work in the game business around here. So it's definitely an advantage as far as, because like any other business, it's all about who you know or what you know. And also I think the young people coming out of here, like out of the college. There's and the college is teaching the game industry stuff. So that's about it.
Yeah, same, you know, echo some similar sentiments. I mean, there is a last check on gamedevmap.com, there was probably close to 30 or so known game companies in Austin. And so, you know, that's one thing that people are interested in is, you know, what are the opportunities here? And so there are quite a few opportunities. The talent base obviously is here. There's only a handful of games that have shipped in this business, and these are big games. These are probably the biggest endeavors that this industry has taken on, and so getting people with that kind of experience is invaluable regardless of the situation or what product they worked on, and so that's really important to pushing the state of the art, and so the talent is here, which is why we're here as Sony Online. And then, you know, also the there's a lot of support from the state government to, you know, grow this industry here. I see a couple members out there in the audience as well. Just, you know, in other words, there's support from them. There's programs in education. There's the Guild Hall, you know, which is a really strong program. You know, Baylor is stepping up. All the areas, because these teams are big. I mean, we're under kind of a cubic growth in terms of opportunity and demand for talent in this business. And you've got the next generation demand, which is going to grow your team size by quite a bit in terms of the amount of information you have to create for a product. There's the MMO opportunity, which, you know, adds, you know, instead of dozens of hours of gameplay, hundreds of hours of gameplay. And then there's also other opportunities like mobile and handheld, which are really putting a stress on the talent pool. And so this is a really great place to not only attract that talent, but to have a good base of talent and opportunities to get people here. So,
yeah, I think talent, the talent pool is clearly the number one biggest asset of Austin. The other thing that I've noticed about the talent pool is Austin tends to be very sticky. When we bring people in from other cities specifically to come to Austin, whether or not they stick with our company, they absolutely want to stick in Austin. And because of that, you had mentioned there, you know, there might be 30 other game companies in the Austin area. That, I think, leads to what I think is the second piece, which is deals. There actually is a fair ability to get deals in Austin, and one of the key reasons for that is because when someone is looking at funding, they look at your ability to put together a team. And looking at Austin and saying, well, you have a basis, you've worked in Austin before, you know people that are already in the area, you're already tied into that community, and there's a large amount of resource to tap. That makes a very compelling package. And I think a lot of that is in fact, thanks to you guys who've you know, created very large organizations here. And I know that, and I have employees even now from almost every organization. We all share employees. It's a pretty tangled little web.
Oh, yeah.
And in case you might, I was jokingly muttering thief.
But we all share resources.
I wasn't really trying to be disparaging by any means. And I actually agree with everything my colleagues here, by the way, said, so I'll try to add a new angle. I think there's another very special aspect to the Austin game development community and the businesses herein, which I will describe as that though we are technically competitors, I believe that we are all very friendly with each other, and especially in the MMO space. And I think that one of the reasons why that is engendered beyond just the fact that it's Austin, and I think that inherently makes people that way who have been naturalized into this community, but in the MMO space, you know, these games are very big, they take a long time, they come out relatively infrequently, so they're rarely truly head-to-head. But even if they were, so far this market has shown no substantial sign of being at saturation. And so every successful game any one of us does, I believe, totally benefits the other. You know, even if you look at the biggest games from California, for example, like the biggest domestic hit these days, World of Warcraft. You know, if you imagine the millions of people that have cycled through that game, the churn rate on any one of these games is the churn rate being how long somebody generally sticks with one game before moving on is generally under a year. And so all of these games have been out for multiple years. And as some of you may know, every online game in history that has been successful to the degree of getting over 100,000 subscribers, to this day still has over 100,000 subscribers, generally is close to their peak ever, even after as long as 10 years. And so if you then add every one of the games that has come to pass, that you know, their current subscriber base gives you some indication of the total current market of players. And again, each new release so far has not daunted the installed base of the previous games. So I think the business reality being in such a phenomenally rapid growth segment, in addition to being the city of Austin, kind of adds up to where we can, with good conscience, root for each other. Because it won't hurt you. It's only better for you if your competitor succeeds.
Excellent. The only thing I'd add to all this is two things. First, talent is mobile. Talent is very mobile. We bring a lot of people. All the companies up here have brought people from out of town to here. And what Todd said really resonates. Austin is sticky. You know, so all these both work hugely in our favor. And I think it's totally environment-based. It's not just about our cluster. It's about the environment. We have high-tech meets creativity meets tolerance, which I want to stress. Because, you know, in Austin, you can be weird. There's a lot of places where you can't be weird. And a lot of people who work for us are weird. So
diversity is key.
Yeah. Well, and not just the diversity, but the tolerance for it. So we can have that happen and not have issues around it. So I think it's very important to recognize that as something that's critical, because a lot of places that used to make games, not just MMOs, but other games, are making less games now than they were 10 years ago or 15 years ago. We used to be much more broadly set out, and now there's more and more clusters, and I think that's driven in some way by the tolerance thing. So we've done the advantages. Let's talk a little bit about disadvantages, and I'll start with Richard. Just two disadvantages that you think that we have.
So having been here a long time, and I earlier described what I thought was some of the early logic for why Origin took off so quickly and was so successful in its earliest era, I see a real problem on the horizon for Austin. And while I would agree that there are schools like the Guildhall and others that are, you know, trying to play catch-up to the demand that we have for staff, at least as far as NCSoft is concerned, we now feel our demand for particular education levels, particular skill sets, particular amounts of experience has now tapped out the Austin market. And we actually can no longer find a wide variety of people, things like qualified art directors, things like 3D artists who are skilled at the variety of high-level skills that we need, things like 3D software engineers. And while all of our companies employ a few of these, the quantity of talent pool that's available to us in those particular specialties is now where we're not only having to compete outside of Austin, but outside of Texas, and frankly, we're now competing for outside of the country. To where, for example, not because we wanted to, not for cost outsourcing, but because we just needed the talent pool, we've opened a large office in Beijing, China, that, in fact, if you include all the costs of the distance and travel and management overhead, it's definitely not cheaper. It's definitely not easier. I would prefer not to, but I truly cannot find the staff we need in Austin specifically, and frankly, it's difficult across the United States. And while there are some schools like the Guildhall, which I think do a good job of turning out level builders and some other things, and even some of the talent I've just mentioned, that is, I think, a critical shortfall right now in Austin.
Yeah, I'm going to echo that first. It is definitely getting harder and harder to find people, which is exactly why I keep stealing them from you guys. So I apologize for that again. The other thing that I've noticed that I'd really like to work on, and I know some of the people in the state have actually been trying to help with that, is just educating in general, educating kind of Austin and people as to how big the games industry is here and how much of an impact it has and will continue to have over time. It is interesting to me how much music and film get in terms of visibility and press when in actuality games is a staggeringly large impact in Austin, and it really kind of goes to a large degree unnoticed. So I think that's another challenge that we'll have to continue to educate people on and as we move forward. Just letting them know the kind of impact that we have.
You know, those are both great points. I mean, I have to echo Richard's point about, you know, that is our biggest success is also our biggest kind of, you know, Achilles heel, if you will, is because it's such an attractive area to be, because there is a lot of opportunity here, the talent is very thin. And, you know, I'm building a team right now for DC Comics, and, you know, I'm growing, almost doubling the size this year from 30 to over 60. And it's a challenge. I'm already, you know, starting off on that, and it's exactly right. The local talent pool is very gainfully employed and has good opportunities, and we are competing, you know, domestically with all sorts of other markets in that case. I mean, we have some advantages to that as well, but it's really going to be a challenge, and part of that challenge has got to be us creating critical and commercial success with all the products here, so kind of like rooting for everybody else to be successful will further strengthen this area, you know, kind of how, you know, Seattle's grown, I guess, over the last several years with several successes that spawned off companies, but talent will migrate to where the opportunities are. And those successes are magnets for that. But there's definitely a shortage of this. And because these games are growing and not getting smaller, that's going to continue to be a burden on here. So as we prepare for the future, that's one of the things we have to put as a paramount, you know, kind of focus for everybody is to, you know, make sure to not only bring people here, but also, you know, support all those programs to, you know, kind of develop people in our local community as well.
Yeah, I have to agree. We've had a hard time finding certain artists and things like that. But other than that, I don't like the stoplights in Austin. They kind of suck. And what else? I haven't had too many pitfalls. Of course, I started my company here. I did have another company in Oakland, California, but it was a music business company, and there was plenty of talent out there for that, a little too much. But so the difference between the two, I don't have much to compare to as far as pitfalls of being in Austin. It seems to be kind of geographically in the middle of the country, which is nice. And one of the threatening things, though, I do believe is the rise of other companies on the West and East Coast. And so we need a lot of hits coming out of Austin.
Yeah, so the perception of hits is almost like a superstition in our business. You know, so, you know, we're all herd animals at heart, which means that we kind of, you know, oh, yeah, it's safe over there if, you know, the hits are being made. So hits is a big part of our, you know, kind of disadvantage. We haven't had a lot of big hits recently, and we need that to actually attract talent here on top of the environment, because the environment works for us, but that particular part of it is a challenge. The other thing I think that's an interesting disadvantage for us is the financing side. We only have, you know, small publishers in town in the big scheme of things. Austin is kind of a job shop for the majority other than NCSoft. So we have NCSoft, we have Aspire, and that's it. All the other publishers, with the exception of EA, have a presence in town. In other words, they work with companies here, but they're not here. So we're not where the money goes. We're where the work goes. So I think that's a challenge for us, a disadvantage. And now the digital distribution world gives us a potential advantage because it's a flattening of the world where, you know, all the infrastructure of a publisher doesn't count as much as it has in the past. So who are our competitors and why? Two competitors. The ones that you worry about the most when you think about, oh, they're going to take people out of Austin, or I have to think about moving there or whatever. Shannon?
Well, Southern California, I would say, is number one, including San Diego and Los Angeles, because you get Blizzard and Sony there. I wouldn't move there if you paid me, but enough. And then I would say the other one's the East Coast. I'm making my areas very broad, I know. You want in the U.S., right?
Yeah.
Mythic and, other names are escaping me right now. But quite a few bubbling up MMO companies out there, too, in the Baltimore, D.C. area.
Yeah, I mean, Seattle is obviously a big area where there's a lot of big, you know, development coming out of there. There's some publishers out of there, both Nintendo and Microsoft. And there's an, you know, the console is opening up the online space with this generation of consoles. And so that certainly is an area that I that a lot of people have been going to, as well as Southern California. I mean, Blizzard has grown to over 2,000 people in that office alone, and primarily, you know, servicing the World of Warcraft machine. And so certainly with that kind of growth and with that kind of success, like, you know, like I said, we're herd animals. We'll go to there. And so we're, you know, that's, those are areas that I keep a close watch on. And again, we have great environment, you know, to defend against. But again, it's the opportunities and the success that we need to focus on here.
Yeah, I'm going to echo what Richard said actually earlier. It's kind of odd that I don't spend a lot of my time thinking about competition in this space. I mean, I think in games, your primary job is to come up with a vision, a creative vision, and then see that vision through. If it's a great vision, really who else out there is doing similar things or doing non-similar things is really not nearly as important. So in terms of competitors, if we're talking about losing out people, like, you know, I'm trying to recruit someone and they end up taking another job, most of the time, honestly, when that happens, they go to one of you guys. I mean, it's very, very rare that we will lose somebody to another city, so I'm afraid I don't really have a particularly good answer to this one. Not that my other answers were particularly good either.
And, it's okay. And I'll echo sort of the same thing, too. I actually think our biggest competitor is ourselves, you know, in the sense of we're going to live or die based on, you know, both the quality of the games that we've already mentioned and how well as a community we educate a developer base to facilitate those games being as great as they are. And if we do that, if we succeed on those two areas, I have no worries about other developers.
Super. I'm only worried about the left coast myself. And that's because, you know, the center, the kind of heavyweight axis of the MMO business exists in Asia. It doesn't actually exist in the U.S. And, you know, the Asian companies that are aligning with the U.S., with the exception of NCSoft, are all in L.A. and Seattle. For the most part, I guess there's two of them in San Francisco now too. So, you know, they want the one flight to get there, and that's been a challenge for us, kind of across the board. And again, the heavyweight like a Blizzard doing so well creates clusters of other companies around it as they shed people, and those people want to do their own games like Red 5 and some others, and the NCSoft studio out there. So, those challenges can only be overcome by us doing the things which are to our advantage, like making hits, making a better environment for people to come do business here. And we're going to end up with one more question, then open it up for your questions. And that is, and try to do it in four sentences. I know it's hard. Where do you see the MMO market going in the next 5 to 10 years, and where does Austin live in that firmament as you envision it? And I'll start with Richard.
Let's see, 5 to 10 years, that's one product cycle?
Yeah, pretty much.
For me.
For real.
Maybe two or three if you're extra speedy. You know, the MMO business, I actually think, especially for me, evolves very slowly in the sense of the state of the art. I mean, I hope that my new game, Tabula Rasa, shakes the world up a little bit in the sense of that some of those details. But if you look at the preceding 10 years... you know, I would argue that most MMOs are built in the model of EverQuest and Ultima Online and refined, but still pretty much that same game dynamic and fundamental activities that you do during gameplay, most of the big MMOs. And I actually think that's the first thing that needs to change, is that we need to bring in elements from other styles of gameplay. And I believe, not only with Tabula Rasa, but I know there's games in development across the panel here that will begin to shake that up. So I believe in 5 to 10 years, you'll just see our first steps outside of that comfort zone we developed to begin with.
Yeah, and I think you're totally right. Beyond even just game design, I think you're going to start to see that pretty dramatically in terms of the business model as well, in getting away from just the standard mechanism that everybody uses right now, which is subscription-based. You'll start to see people using advertising a lot more, people using free-to-play, but you can buy in-game power-ups. So there's a number of ways I think it's going to morph. The other major thing that I think is going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years is you're going to see some colossal explosions. There is an unbelievable amount of money flowing in into our space right now, into MMOs, because of World of Warcraft. It's made, I mean, for those of you who don't know, I think they have 8 million subscribers charging $15 a month. So, I mean, that's enough money that you have very, very large companies and a lot of investors starting to look up and say, hey, wait a second, I want to get in on that. And you're starting to have a lot of non-trivial deals, you know, $50, $60 million deals going to teams that have never done it before. And what we do is not easy at all. In fact, it is almost the canonical. It's a combination of every hard computer science problem there is. You've got AI, you've got physics, you've got lighting, you've got rendering, you've got, you know, interaction of N players who basically want to cluster into a single contiguous space. I mean, it's every basically hard problem there is to solve. And on top of that, if you can get all those technical pieces solved, it still has to actually be fun. So I think that the other major thing we're going to see here is we're going to see a lot of really, really large losses and punctuated by some really, really dramatic wins and some really, really interesting plays coming out of areas we don't expect, like the Virtual Horse Rancher game and Club Penguin and Toontown and Puzzle Pirates, some of these smaller games who were made on a much, much tighter budget with a much, much smaller scope who just kind of blossom and explode. So,
yeah, I think for me, part of that driving force for both the business model and, you know, essentially targeting new white space in our industry is going to be, you know, on the console. That's what I'm wrestling with right now is what does an MMO mean on a console? Because all the consoles are networked now. You know, there's a certain shared experience and social gameplay that people like even on the console in terms of couch play. Now, how does that manifest itself across the networks? You know, on all these different consoles that are out there. And so we're trying to tackle that. And to do that, we need to have less traditional MMO gameplay. You know, that's kind of an area in the next 5 or 10 years that I'm wrestling with, is how to deliver that kind of expected play experience in a shared environment and still accomplish all the things we're able to with our current standard MMO. So that's what we're focused on.
Okay, well, I'm going to be an optimist and a visionary here. I didn't get my JPEGs together, but I definitely see the word Austin over the hills, like Hollywood, you know, and I want the MMO industry to be like big as Hollywood, and this basically be the place to be. And as well as, like, you know, a Walk of Fame with little discs on there, you know, Gordon Walton's name, and then the MMO Museum where there's a big dragon on top, and you can walk in and see all the different old characters from everything from Ultima Online to the big World of Warcraft section and all that. And so that's where I see it.
I like your vision better than mine. I'm going to go with yours instead.
Me too.
That sounds a lot better than mass explosions.
I was
going to
say, I kind of, you know, the contrast between the post-apocalyptic, you know, vision and the Hollywood vision.
I'd like to revise my statement, please.
Well, I would hope that, you know, MMOs are still kind of in their beginning because our iteration cycle has been slow. You know, I think there's an opportunity for the diversity of MMOs to be as diverse as all electronic gaming is today. So today, when we think about electronic gaming, MMOs is one piece of a big, big puzzle. And frankly, MMOs could be doing all the things that all electronic games do. So I think there's an opportunity there for that to happen as we kind of branch out. I mean, you see it, there's a few MMO cell phone games. There's a lot of MMO web games. We're going to see a lot of MMO console games, and it's a different style of play than the standalone gaming is. So I'm looking forward to that. The other thing I think is pretty critical for the future is the tools and know-how are getting better, which means that smaller teams can do stuff. And one of the things that's held up MMOs is only huge, highly costly teams have been able to do things for a while. And that doesn't mean that there haven't been some interesting things done by 3 to 5 people, because there have. But we haven't seen a breakout hit come from 3 to 5 people, with the exception of the really light stuff, like, what is it, Neopets, Club Penguin, started very, very small and grew. So I think those are the opportunities. So we're open for questions. You need to go to the mic to ask your question, because I'm not going to repeat it. And anything goes, as long as you're polite. If you're not polite, I'll be mean to you.
My name is Joe Bradford. It's called Strategies out of the Washington, D.C. area. And there's MMO activity you set up in D.C. and Baltimore, and it was fascinating. I've been coming to Austin a long time. My only thing I would say is I see it turning into potentially a Dallas and Houston in terms of traffic. And I think the housing prices, which have been a bargain compared to other places, will start, which they already are heading up. So I think that could impact the quality of life as far as a more broad scale, just a comment. The other thing, I have become interested over the past year in some of the virtual worlds, like Second Life and some of those. And I've not really done the multiverse or whatever. I would like to understand what's going on in Austin and how you guys are looking at it, and it's probably a dirty word to even say, but it also, it's amazing the people that get in there and create content, and it's obviously low level compared to what you guys do, but perhaps it is a way to bring in creative types and all that, and corporations now are just flocking to this, throwing money, they're throwing money at this space. And I think they're trying to figure it all out. So what is your comment on this space, like a Second Life type environment? And is anything going on in Austin in that? Are you guys looking at this? Would you consider morphing your model to that in some aspect?
Anybody want to talk to user-created content?
Go ahead. I have some thoughts on, when you think of user-created content, I always think back to the days I started playing pen and paper Dungeons & Dragons. And when it was popular to a very small group of early adopters, those early adopters were all very good storytellers. And we pretty much ignored the rules, and we made up our own game that I actually think were great. Universally, all those early game masters would play with I thought were fantastic. And then when I went off to college and I came back years later to play with the D&D groups as they evolved, they had run out of good storytellers, and we were now down to the people who would sit down there and argue over, well, I'm standing behind you, and I'm up on a rock ledge, so I've got a plus 2% and minus this. And after half an hour of arguing, you'd roll some dice and say, okay, let's start over. You know, and it was no longer fun. And when I look at user-created content, I actually think the majority of it is not only not exceptional. I think the majority of it is, in fact, abhorrent to wade through in order to find the few punctuations of quality content. That being said, we clearly only employ a very small amount of the total potentially highly talented people. And so the trick is to how to provide the tool suite and access to a very broad base of people, and then allow the quality people to bubble up to a surface where they can then be exposed to a wider audience without having most people wade through the tripe that exists in the majority of the creations. And that's where I think a lot of these big MMOs who have tried to allow a large amount of player-created content in have failed, as they've failed in the sorting process. But clearly that is solvable. I know lots of people are trying to solve it, and I think that once we have created games where, for example, using an Ultima Online metaphor, if you have theaters, the majority of people putting on plays in the UO theaters were pretty crummy. But if there was ever a good magazine that would review the plays, and you actually paid a dollar to go in the front door, and therefore you wouldn't want to walk in and pay your real dollar to somebody to see a bad play, so you would be worth it for you then to pay 50 cents to the magazine that would tell you which one of the 50 was worth seeing, and then everybody would go to that one of the 50, and the others would disappear for economic reasons. It's that economic feedback loop to the quality of the user-created content that I believe will ultimately be the sorting mechanism.
Anybody else want to tackle it?
Oh, yeah, I'll take a stab at that. It is tough to wrestle with as a content creator what that means. I know that as Sony, we just announced our home product at the GDC, which is obviously inspired by those types of virtual worlds, and then also Little Big World, which was kind of the first. Where I saw how user created content would kind of look like on a console was very, very interesting, and also SingStar, which is again more like YouTube. So in other words, I think in terms of limiting those tools, making sure those tools allow for users to provide those kinds of products to express their creativity in a way that is entertaining to others is going to be the key part of how they'll succeed. I still think it's a puzzle that we're trying to work out, and certainly for this generation of MMOs at that level, creating an MMO world as we know them today certainly is tougher in the hands of users than it is in the hands of the developers, in my opinion. So
I'll add one thing, and that's the concept of ownership is very sticky. Meaning, if I own something in a game, I'm stuck, right? I can't give it up psychologically. So I think that, you know, tapping into that's important, and everything that everybody else said is true also. It's very, very difficult to do it well.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Dan Hon. I work for a company in London called Mind Candy, and we develop an alternate reality game called Perplex City. And I was just wondering, this is more kind of like future of MMOs and innovation kind of question. I mean, the more that we start thinking about what we're doing and how we're building it, we started off with a massive world building exercise. So we developed a map of our entire world and we worked out the stories that we wanted to tell in it. And the more we think about it, we realize that we're sending people basically on quests. So we have these puzzles where, you know, we take a random photo of someone, and we call it this 1 billion to 1. So if you solve this, you find this Japanese guy who we printed on this card, and then you'll get XP or whatever it is, you know, the points that we use to level up. And just wonder what you think about the kind of, everyone seems to be ending up in the same kind of area now, but approaching it from different directions. So, you know, we're kind of approaching it from a traditional ARG type direction. The Lonely Girl people are approaching it from film. They want more interactivity. And everyone's going after these massive audiences. So I just wondered what you guys, you know, thought about what was happening in that area.
I'll start. I don't think that everybody's going after massive audiences, first and foremost. I see more disaggregation. So the people, you know, when you talk to us up here, you know, at least 4/5 of us are after massive audiences, and, you know, from the get-go, you know, we're doing mass market type of things. But mass market's not where most MMOs and most games are being made going forward. So it's going to be niche audiences,
it's not
mass
audiences.
Yeah, our products are very niche audience, and I mean, that's kind of like our little cash cows here and there. And of course, we do want to do mainstream stuff eventually, but.
Yeah, we'd like to screw with more people's minds rather than less. Every creator wants to do that.
Yeah.
We want you to buy into whatever our reality is.
World domination thing.
Yeah, world domination's great. Anybody else want to?
I think it goes back to the roots of all gameplay, which is, you know, community and shared experience, and that's really what Interactive is about. And so I think that I think your CEO's talk at DICE about the RGX. He had just found out that somebody had solved a puzzle.
Yeah.
And it was he was pretty excited about that, and it was really interesting because you're right. It's a lot of it is the same kind of content, but, you know, part of that is just working together, overcoming, solving puzzles, you know, accomplishing things as a group, building relationships. You know, kind of what Gordon said about the ownership part. You know, owning those relationships as well. I think it's a new part of how, you know, how storytelling is evolving in this century, and with you know, especially, you know, conference like South by Southwest, where you have, you know, music, interactive, film. There's all these mediums that are coming together, and you're looking at, you know, one of my favorite TV shows right now is Heroes, and the amount of community participation in there, and you know, distribution of information in more alternative ways as opposed to traditional means, has allowed that community to grow and thrive and flourish. And I think that's what we're going to see moving forward across all mediums in that case.
Cool. And I just have a brief thing to throw out, which is, you know, as attractive as I find the metaverse style games to be personally, I just think it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I look at it and go, you know, a metaverse game is never going to be the best game at a particular niche. For example, if I'm going to go build a haunted house in the metaverse, it will never be as cool as the game that was designed to be an undead killer game. Because, again, the tools and the suites of features they'll bring to bear will be more tightly focused. And so I think the metaverse games are cool and one part of the swath of product offerings that will be out there, but are not the end all.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm Dave Downing. Sorry. And hi, Richard. I used to work with Richard and been in the game biz for like 8 years back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And it was difficult to manage building games and having a life outside of games. I have kids now who are about to go into the game business when they you know, got excited about it. So,
have you taught them not to have a life yet?
Well, yeah, they pretty much live in WoW, so you know that's their life. So, but I want to know what you guys have done to attract a more mature audience so that they can have a life, still make games, still deal with reality, and work with the young crowd that typically populates a game studio.
I deal a lot directly with my players, and I do worry about them a lot because our game apparently is addicting, especially the horse game. And is that what you mean, like, about encouraging them?
Well, I think you're talking about the workers, not the victims, basically, yeah. Right?
Okay. Right. Not the victims that you inflict this on.
Oh, I enjoy my life. I mean, you know, after I finish working on games, I play games, and quite content. My dogs say I need to get out more, but I definitely enjoy the balance between playing games and working on games. No, I do complain about myself, though. I need to get out and be more active. I agree.
Richard? But,
well, you know, I spent many years, with some of them with you, in the era of, 12-plus hour work days, 7 days a week, for years at a time. And, you know, there was, once upon a time, you in theory could afford it, if you decided to devote your life that way. But I know, at least even for me personally, there's just no way I would be willing to do that at this stage. I have a much more rich personal life, and I have many more interests outside the office. And so, for example, on TR, which, by the way, has taken a really long time, and so maybe this is a part of the cause of that, is that, you know, we've had, at least my brother would argue that it was one of the causes, you know, we have an absolute policy against persistent, what was often called crunch mode, our demand of everybody is no more than 8 to 10 hours a day, has been for the entire life of the project. We've managed to hold to that for all the years of the project. We're now only a few months away from release. You can argue that once you release an MMO, it'll get worse. But the point is, we at least have managed to keep, you know, all the time to date in what I consider a very well-managed overtime policy, where when we come up to milestones, only those people whose individual tasks are behind for that particular milestone are ever allowed to go into crunch, and then crunch is never allowed on an individual to go past a few weeks of time before we just go, well, I guess the schedule's got to slip, because we just think that lifestyle is that important.
I like that. I'm a firm disbeliever of crunch time. I don't ever want to subject my company to anything like that, and just, you know, to be able to try and be more responsible about deadlines or whatever. I'm not a fan of the idea of crunch time.
But also, I think the industry has matured a lot and is continuing to mature as, you know, people that, like myself as well, have been through those death marches and don't want to do it again, don't want to put people through that. You know, trying to be smarter about how we do games, how we make games. There's a lot of agile methodologies, scrum methodologies, different types of development methodologies that are being put in place. Educating the resource givers, the financiers, the publishers, if you will, just in terms of what's important and what's important about a project, and then actually having a lot of information to look at it and go, your efficiency essentially goes down. You know, we use a little method called DevCon for development condition, and we try to predict it and we try to manage it in such a way that allows us to maintain some predictability. So we say, hey, you know, Thursday and Friday, Saturday and Sunday is all yours. You know, maybe Monday and Tuesday we're going to focus on this milestone, but again, keeping it in measured, predictable spots and not just turning on the accelerator and the throttle and just saying this is the way it's going to be until we ship, because it doesn't create good products. You don't keep people that way. And in an increasingly competitive environment where, you know, the revenues and the bets are bigger and bigger, you need that talent to stay around. And so there's definitely quite a lot of effort on that front. And as a father of four kids, I really, those are my priorities right now. And making games is after that.
Yeah, my last project, we actually did go into a crunch for about a year and a half. And the problem with that, beyond the fact that it's miserable, is you get to the end and you finally launch, and that's really when your team needs to be able to kick into high gear. That's when it's time for your real burst of speed. And if you've killed everybody getting to that point, then you're dead. I mean, quite frankly, you just won't survive in the market, because once you have actual users pounding on your system instead of 50,000 robots or 100,000 robots, leaks are going to start springing left and right, and you've got to have people to throw on those fires. So that said, I just came off a three-week crunch, and I'm very, very tired. So it does happen. I'd like to be able to say that you know, I've managed to get in a position where we never crunch, but still, time to time, it happens. You know, if you asked me this time last week what day it was, I couldn't have told you.
Well, I've yet to see the creative business, you know, a business that's involved with creativity that can run to a schedule. All right? And, you know, for all our good intentions, we're like a bunch of alcoholics falling off the wagon. As soon as, you know, the next, you know, crisis occurs, and there's a lot of crises in our business because it's not well understood. So I think that the challenge is going to remain in an ever more competitive worldwide environment to, you know, to actually do what we set out to do, which is to make something great, there's never enough time or money to make it great, ever. We're poorly managed. You know, we don't have great foresight about how long it's going to take to do stuff. And as much as I would like to never crunch, I know that that's probably an impossibility. The question is, how smart can you be to minimize it, not can you get rid of it? And so I think we're decades away from being smart enough to really know how to build these things to a plan, you know, that actually has human thought.
It's still a baby business.
Yeah. I'm not convinced that you completely ever can. The magic of it is, hey, I'm doing something really innovative and different, and I've happened to find a formula that just really turns out to be fun. That requires iteration and research and development time, and by definition, to some degree, you can't really predict that. So
and that's why they call it development, not manufacturing.
That's right.
The manufacturing part you can predict, the development part you just have to, you know, deal with.
Great, thanks.
Yep. Good question.
But warn your kids. There are other industries.
That's the beauty of it. They don't know. What they don't know can't hurt them that much, right? Oh.
Hi, I'm Chad Williams. I chair the Austin's Telecommunications Commission. And Mr. Walton, earlier you made a comment of Austin is where the work goes, but not the money.
You betcha.
I think that has to do with lack of a publisher or a production company in the cycle. Can you elaborate that a little bit more? And also, be interesting to hear what can the city do to help complete that business cycle? And let me get my pen.
Ooh, I'll let Richard go first.
Yeah.
I think this is a critical problem. I mean, even though we're one of the publishers that is, you know, doling out money to development teams around town, we mentioned Aspire earlier, and there's probably a couple others that we could mention too. But you know, compared to the West Coast, it's close to zero. And if you watch, for example, EA, who acquired Origin back in 1992. You know, as they acquired many, many, many studios all over the world, and then when they get into tough times, they consolidate. And of course, if they consolidate, they're going to consolidate around their headquarters, which means all the outlying studios go away and they fold in on themselves out in California. And in any competitive business, those cycles are going to occur. And so without publishers in Austin, it means that we're at the tail end of the dog, and there's going to be a binge and purge that occurs as other publishers decide to go through investment or withdrawal eras, and that's going to unemploy wave after wave of Austin developers. So we have to get publishers here into town. And as a, you know, and Origin was, again, one of the other publishers that was here in town back in the day. And if you compare, for example, how Austin works to attract the movie industry, how they work to attract high-tech manufacturing, they do all kinds of things, none of which has ever been offered to the games business. For example, there's tax incentive, there's real estate, they convert warehouses into recording studios. The amount of money the city invests, either by direct spending or tax abatement, to these other industries to attract their financial head ends is noteworthy, and the lack of spending towards our companies, or, you know, I'd like some of those tax benefits, you know, has been zero through the 25 years that I've been one of the biggest players in the market.
Right. Something that just came to my mind. You mentioned the film industry in Austin. I was at the Austin Film Studios press announcement about how they're going to utilize the bond money that just got passed. I think it was Proposition 4. But they said the exact same thing, in that in the burgeoning film industry in Austin, there is that one final production element missing. And it just struck me that exactly what they said was wrong is exactly what I hear from the gaming industry. And I'm wondering, are there companies that could do both? Kill two birds with one stone.
Can do both what?
Publish gaming as well as publishing movies.
You're probably get different opinions. I'm actually a convergence skeptic. And I know that a lot of people in Austin believe in this and talk about this big digital convergence and this big overlap between the film industry and the game industry. And I've been working with the city on a lot of their efforts to actually support the game industry as a kind of sidekick to the film industry. And by all means, anything we can do to support the games business, I think, is a good thing, thinking very self-centeredly about our portion of the business. That being said, you know, while there are some concept artists or maybe some 3D artists who can do animation or special effects in movies and also in games, I think that's about where the beginning and the end of the convergence exists. I actually think the skill set necessary to create interactive gaming and the skill set necessary to create a linear script are as different as can be, and none of the people in my 25 years of being in this business who have tried to move from one side of the fence to the other in a meaningful top way as a top 10 production person in either category has ever succeeded. My strong but perhaps off-the-cuff answer would be no, there's not a company that will do both of those things well. But I may be
I'd probably disagree with that. But for me, I think you're probably right. Getting the skill sets to cross over is pretty tough. Getting the intellectual property to cross over, though, is not necessarily as big of a challenge. And granted, most of the crossovers we've seen so far have ended up in fairly lackluster movies. That's not to say that it won't eventually happen. So I think there probably could be some merit to that. There are crossover pieces that I think could be DVD distribution, marketing, PR. I think there actually are a number of areas that you could see some convergence. But I, at its core, I think there's also a lot of key differences. So I think it would be pretty challenging. Any one company, if they were to go raise a bunch of money and say, we're going to invest in film and games, there's a really good chance that they would do a pretty piss-poor job of both, as opposed to concentrating on one or the other. But I do think that there's a possibility for it. I just think it would be exorbitantly challenging.
Well, for me, I mean, we're a division of Sony Pictures, so I guess we can speak to that as much as anybody as far as SOE is concerned. And we only maybe share an artist or two at any kind of occasion. So I'd have to agree with what Richard was saying, because it is tough to cross over. And we actually have been looking at this region for expanding. But it's like Gordon said, it's more, you know, doing the work. The money will always go back to Culver City. That's not going to change in terms of that accord. And there's a competitive area. There's a lot of different regional areas in this local area that are very much incentivizing companies to move out there, because there is a cost issue associated with getting out of LA, but the money will still ultimately go back there in terms of that kind of convergence, or, you know, all-encompassing kind of publisher slash a movie IP holder, if you will. So we do need more publishers in Austin. I mean, that's why Seattle, I think, is thriving the way it is. That's why, obviously, the left coast is thriving the way it is. And we are fledgling in that area. But we have the talent here. With the success, we can continue to build that. And it's just a matter of, you know, getting people out here and getting sold on the area.
Well, the other golden rule is, he who has the money makes the rules. And, the money's not here. So the money in Texas is in Dallas, and it's in Houston. It's not here. This is not a finance center. And financing center is one of the big missing components of us being a major player. You need to finance it here, or you're just going to be a job shop. So that's, kind of fundamental to being a publisher, is having the money in the first place. And so wherever the money goes, that's where the gravity is. And while we have a significant number of kind of high net worth people here in town, we do not have really a huge financing infrastructure within Austin.
Just a quick comment to that. I think Austin's tolerance for diversity and the sort of a central value of our culture is kind of an anti-establishment, right? Doesn't tend to attract the financial industry as well. But following on, I want to go back to Mr. Blakely. In terms of Sony, do you feel, I think that is a wonderful example, right? You've got a film company. You didn't really speak to whether you feel like they are doing a good job of promoting the games division and the work of your group. So I think that you really have the best situation for saying, can one company do both?
Yeah, I mean, Yair Landau, who's our chairman, basically, is also chairman for Sony Pictures Digital. So that's Sony Pictures Animation and Sony Pictures Imageworks. And done an amazing job of just letting us run our business. I mean, we are a publisher in our own right. We do box product as well as digital distribution for online products on different platforms, the PSP, the PS3, the PC. And so, they've done a great job of just kind of hands off, and then, looking for opportunities to leverage both our IP up and their IP down. So a lot of those haven't been a good fit, and he's been very progressive in that sense, and you know, kind of letting us find where we intersect and where we don't. And then we have shared resources on recent products. We did a product for the PS3 launch called Dark Kingdom. We had several artists that came down to San Diego, our San Diego studio, that were in between working on, they just finished up Monster House, several animators. They came down, and instead of cutting those guys loose, which is traditional in that business, they put them onto the game product for a period that, you know, again, that's where the crossover was really natural and where it made sense and ended, actually. And they did a great job helping us out getting through that tough time with the amount of assets we had to create. And they went back to work on the next movie back in L.A. So, you know, we have done that. We're trying to make inroads to that. But it's still a challenge internally to figure out where those lines cross and where they meet. So
we are out of time. Do you have a really short question or is it a really long question?
You can answer it yes or no.
No. Now, what's the question?
Have you found a lot of audio talent in Austin, or is that something you have to outsource to other areas?
There's a vast oversupply of audio talent in Austin, from my point of view. Anybody?
Yeah, I've got a handful of CDs that are demos that I would like to get some work for them. But
a lot of audio talent, yeah. It's good to find here.
And I agree. The talent base is definitely here. We occasionally go outside the city just for a name for marketing purposes. But from a just from the quality standpoint, there's definitely a great pool here in Austin.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.